WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The chairman of the House Oversight Committee has issued a subpoena to Ghislaine Maxwell, the convicted associate of Jeffrey Epstein, for a deposition to occur next month at the Florida Federal Correctional Institution, where she is behind bars. Sources familiar with the matter also tell ABC News that Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche will meet with Maxwell today at the prison. And another development.
The Wall Street Journal reporting that Attorney General Pam Bondi and her deputy Todd Blanche informed President Trump in May that his name appears multiple times in the Epstein files. They reportedly told Trump they did not plan to release the files, saying they contain child pornography and personal information about the victims. According to the Journal, the president said he would defer to their decision.
ABC Chief White House Correspondent Mary Bruce, one of two doctors who treated actor Matthew Perry with ketamine, has changed his guilty plea. He says he is profoundly remorseful for the treatment decisions he made. This is ABC News.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Another potential big-time blockbuster hits the big screen this weekend at your local theaters. Fantastic Four: First Steps is the latest mega movie summer release, and reviews are pretty good. The film, which stars Pedro Pascal, Vanessa Kirby, and the Bears' Ebon Moss-Bacharach, is currently pulling an 87% certified fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes. If you're wondering about the plot, well, I don't want to spoil it, but let's just say there's a lot of superhero-type stuff happening. If you're tired of franchise or superhero films and want a good scare, you have two options this weekend. The first has only one review, and it is negative. The second is called Together, and it is pulling a 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Together stars Dave Franco and Alison Brie, and follows the story of a couple who decide to move to the country, which sounds great in real life, but in the movies, it is never a good idea. If you like the supernatural and the Franco brother that isn't Creepy James, check it out. Let's go to the movies. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The next step for the Packers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports from Lambeau Field. This will be head coach Matt LaFleur's 7th training camp in Green Bay. And although they've been to the playoffs nearly every year, I asked him, has he thought about what else is there left to do to get to the next step, a Super Bowl?
That's what we're always hunting, is trying to figure out how to get everybody to elevate. Myself, our staff, our support staff, and certainly our players, because they're the ones out there going to play the game. So that is at the forefront of our mind all the time.
Baseball. Brewers with a 10-2 win over the Mariners. The crew has now won 10 games in a row whenever they've had pitcher Quinn Priester on the mound.
You know, I attribute a lot of his success to the pace. You know what I mean? Like, he just gets it and goes, gets it and goes, gets it and goes. Doesn't give you a lot of time. There's not a lot of trepidation. There seems like there's a lot of conviction. Ball sinking, and then he's got a little cutter, he's got a little curveball, a little slider, and he's attacking.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Matt and Air on Air.
Corrine Hendrickson, you mentioned a conversation with Ron Johnson, Corrine, about the need for child care in Wisconsin. How did that go?
I said, why don't you think we should fund? And he goes, I think an elegant solution, it would be for moms like you to stay home so the other moms can go to work. And I said, well, and I shouldn't get paid for that? And he just kind of stared at us. And I said, that tells me all I need to know.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Troubles in the courts for the Trump administration. Jim Samtale, former U.S. attorney and acting attorney, will join us to break it all down. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
We have a chance of scattered thunderstorms, especially early on today, and then gradually clearing by later this afternoon. It's going to be cooler, but still muggy. Our high in the low 80s. Tonight, an isolated shower or thunder shower, mid-60s tomorrow. Partly cloudy with an isolated late-day storm, high 86. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 68.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety.
CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome radio legend Steve Cochran, who will make the popcorn pick of the week. Then the Overture Center's Tim Sowers joins me to give us a preview of upcoming shows. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
I think we've got another hot, sticky day on the way around Wisconsin, but I don't see the heat indexes quite as strong as they were yesterday. Come on in, everybody. It's the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke on the radio. This is the Midwest Farm Report. Yeah, we're probably going to see a little rain this morning, probably before 8 a.m. Daytime highs today are expected to be 85 under a mostly cloudy sky, but I don't see the heat indexes like we had yesterday. We will have a wind out of the southwest, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, another chance of rain, overnight lows down to 70. Then for Friday, chance of rain probably in the afternoon, otherwise a partly sunny Friday, 86 the expected high. We'll find out what Stu Mucker, ag meteorologist, has to say about that in about 15 minutes. Stand by. You know, this weather is not what the doctor ordered when it comes to county fairs or county fair attendance. We've still got a lot of life left in our county fairs before the summer is done. Stephanie Hoff caught up with Jamie Butke, executive director of the Wisconsin Fair Association, to find out how the tempo has been with all this severe weather this summer. We'll hear from her. And we're catching up with Ryan Yonkman, vice president of EverAg. Dairy has been struggling mightily lately in the marketplace, but why? And can we get it turned around? Those are just a couple of the conversations coming your way.
You're invited to Clinton Farms in Bear Creek for this year's Farm Technology Days, Generations of Progress. This year's event features the chance to explore cutting-edge equipment, innovative techniques, and taking a glimpse into the next generation of agriculture. There's also a rotary parlor, seminars, and, of course, field demos of all kinds. Mark your calendars for August 5th through the 7th and bring the whole family to this year's event. For more information and show details, visit wifarmtechdays.org.
This is the sound of corn pests wreaking havoc on your crops. This is the sound of a channel field protected by Bayer's trait technology. With the RNAi technology of SmartStax Pro, the all-in corn rootworm fighter, and VT4 Pro, Bayer's widest spectrum of defense, you can stay one step ahead of ever-changing pest pressure. Find the right corn trait for your fields at channel.com/corn traits. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Thanks to dairy farmers of Wisconsin, you'll have dairy all around you during the best 11 days of summer. We're talking about the Wisconsin State Fair, July 31st through August 10th, where DFW can be spotted advancing the next generation of dairy men and women. Board member Jody Miller tells us how dairy farmers take care of the youth in their community.
We supply t-shirts to the youth. They get out a very powerful fact. Something we're really proud of is that 99% of dairy farmers in Wisconsin are family owned. It's a great reminder of who's really behind Wisconsin dairy. We are involved in the judging of educational dairy exhibits, and we sponsor youth showmanship awards. And it's a really great way to celebrate the next generation of dairy leaders that are coming. We involve farmers. Farmers are real active in this.
Jody Miller says you can find more details about what Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin has on the agenda for the state fair at wisconsindairy.org.
It takes more than a couple hours and some good luck to get a livestock project ready for the fair. Exhibitors are known to spend many long, hardworking days to make sure their animals not only look their best, but are also prepared for the sights and sounds of the fair. I'm Kylie Allen from the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison. Along with me today is the Extension Youth Livestock Specialist, Bernie O'Rourke. She's sharing what exhibitors can do to make the transition from their animals' pens at home to those at the fair as smooth as possible.
I mean, I think everything starts at home, quite honestly, right? Spending the time with them and getting them associated to people and noises and all of the sounds that can occur at a fair or an event where animals may or may not be used to them. So I always encourage exhibitors and youth is to, yeah, turn the radio up at home, have that on all the time, have things whipping in the wind in the barn so they're used to all of that different sounds that they would get at their local county fair or state fair or any event thereof. you know, at home, always in terms of just movement and handling, it's a lot of patience. It's a lot of soft talking. But working with your team, which might be your family members or other friends that you work together and are using really good animal handling skills by, you know, understanding the flight zones of the animal. So I just wanted to start with that because I think that's super important. Making sure the animals are kind of like puppy dogs, right? And that they're ready to go on into the fair season. At home, all those things still apply, right? By loading in a calm environment and making sure that distractions such as shadows and being able to, you know, kind of cover the spots that they might be able to escape by using gates or hurdles for pigs, those boards that you see people moving pigs around. That's really important to have those as well in strategic positions. And just making sure there's maybe limited help, you know, sometimes less people helping might be more impactful and helpful than a lot of people. And certainly, you know, kids or others that might be yelling or maybe talking really loudly, really trying to kind of minimize on that, you know, type of environment. In terms of care, make sure you've got you're hauling animals to the event in cool weather. And so if you can do it early in the morning or later at night, depending on your fair schedule, that would be encouraged. Certainly not during the heat of the day would be preferred. As we talk today, it's like 60 degrees. So it's maybe not even a concern, but on those days where it certainly heat index, humidity and temperature are high, the heat index is something we want to be mindful of when we're loading animals and trying to get them to locations earlier or at the coolest part of the day.
So you said some things that I think are pretty interesting in there. One that I want to circle back on, you said that sometimes fewer people helping to load is better than more people. That's kind of, I think, counterintuitive to what a lot of us might think. Why is that?
Yeah, I think that is certainly a thing. I think that as we have researched animal handling, researched how animals behave and move, we've really found out that less people is more impactful. You know, a lot of it has to do with distractions, right? If there's too many people and too many people talking, it's pretty distracting for an animal. But the people that have been around the animal a lot is probably one of the most important things. And even when you're unloading at the county fair or at this event, you certainly want the people that animal's been around to really lead them or take them into the area and space that they are.
So now we're at the fair and there's a lot going on. What's the best thing we can do as exhibitors or people who brought those animals to keep them calm?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to unloading, again, I always try and encourage people to unload at the fair when there's just not a lot of traffic, right? Not a lot of spectators. I mean, all animals are unpredictable, but most of our youth projects are super, you know, tame. They've been worked with every day. You know, they get such good care. They're basically pampered. So for the most part, they come in being ready and understanding, you know, the assignment. There certainly are animals that maybe just right, they have a personality that they are just nervous and scared, just like people. Some of us are more anxious than others, and that applies as well to animals. So just knowing your animal, knowing how they think and operate can really help you kind of minimize any of those challenges. And certainly understanding animal behavior, I think, you know, there's a lot of research that Temple Grandin has done related to animals and where their eyes are, where their ears are, in agitation, and you can kind of prepare yourself if this animal is, you think is doing okay or might need an extra hand on the halter. So I think those are all good, you know, minimizing young kids around, minimizing, you know, noise making machines when you're around there, making sure when you do unload them that they get, that they have good bedding. You know, if it's going to be hot, make sure, you know, there are shavings or some sort of way to keep cool bedding available to them. Make sure they get a good drink of water once you get there. And then, yeah, for some of the ruminants, giving them a little taste of their grain or hay just to kind of calm them down and get them settled into the fair is only going to help and get them comfortable. And once they eat a little bit, then they lay down and rest. And that's really, really what you want them to do.
So when we are around livestock, we know that there is a flight zone and an appropriate place that you should approach an animal. Can you just go ahead and give us an overview of what a flight zone means and what that looks like?
Flight zones are really, it means that you're in an area of the animal's comfort zone, right? Or you're in their bubble, and it could make them uncomfortable.
It's not an uncommon experience for exhibitors to be approached by spectators at these events wanting to interact with their animals. What's the best way for an exhibitor to communicate with that spectator or consumer, the best way to approach their animal or deal with that flight zone?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it is pretty hard, especially on large animals like the beef cattle. You know, there's a lot of kids that want to come up and pet them. And certainly young people can still, if they're uncomfortable with that interaction, just, you know, really communicating like, you know, I really appreciate you asking, but he's, you know, just kind of nervous being here at the fair. It's a new environment, and I'd feel more comfortable if you didn't pet my animal. So something like that, fairgoers will understand.
Approaching livestock at our county fairs is much like approaching a dog you don't know. Always best to ask permission before you do so. That's Extension Youth Specialist Bernie O'Rourke along with us. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Kylie Allen.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The voices of 86% of Maine voters were silenced July 14th as a federal appeals court found a 2023 ballot initiative limiting political spending by foreign-owned corporations likely violates the Constitution's right to free speech. Question 2 passed with an astounding 86.4% support after foreign corporations flooded Maine with advertising to get voters to approve a hydroelectric transmission corridor from Canada through Maine. The power companies and the Maine media, which benefited from millions in advertising dollars, sued on free speech grounds. Federal rules prohibit campaign contributions by foreign entities in federal elections, but don't address state spending or ballot initiatives. Question 2 prohibited foreign entities or subsidiaries with 5% or more foreign ownership from making contributions to candidates or ballot measures, required disclosure of advertising funding, and mandated disclosure whenever a foreign government attempted to influence an issue in Maine. A 3-judge panel agreed with the lower court's finding that determining whether multinational corporations exceeded 5% foreign ownership would be hard to enforce. It also agreed that the political spending limits would have a chilling effect on the right of corporations to speak out on issues. Another Maine money and politics case was decided July 15th, but this one is headed to the U.S. Supreme Court. More on that in our next report. I'm Brian Beal.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll be talking about K-12 public education in this state from the Wisconsin Public Education Network Conference in Green Bay. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
That's what I was seeing. A lot of tree damage. I did catch one picture of this huge oak tree down in a building. Not a good sign.
No, and I know that one of the fire department roofs or public utility roofs in Gillett, where the county fair is, all torn to shreds. So that storm that came through yesterday had all the feel to it at this time yesterday morning that it was going to pack a punch. Weather-wise, Tim from McFarland, 1.5 as far as his rain gauge. Then everything else tapers off quite a bit. Linda in Reeseville, 0.7, a quarter of an inch in Union Grove. What else do you see out there notable?
Well, the big ones were Park Falls at 1.25 inches. And then we look down to Eau Claire at 1.67 inches and Wausau at 2.35 inches. I saw Green Bay weighing in with about 0.8 inches and a whole lot lighter over here in the Fond du Lac area, 0.1 inches or so. But now this activity is giving us a little break right now, but the cool front still dropping into Wisconsin, still lining up from, the far northeast part of the state up near the UP border, if you will, and back towards southeast Minnesota. There is some rain in the UP, a little scattered shower, Rhinelander down to Wausau, and then over into far southwest Wisconsin, down into Iowa. Through the day today, that cool front will drop southeastward. Well, there could be a little rain chance this morning in the northwest. Later in the day, it clears out. The further you head south and southeast, the more likely it is we see some rain yet a bit later today, afternoon or on toward evening. Could be a couple of 0.1 inches in about the southeastern third of Wisconsin or so yet late today or into the night. That system clears out. The frontal boundary itself just becomes a little stationary to our south. I expect it to return as a warm front, and that's why late Friday or into Saturday, showers and, again, a few thunderstorms could develop. Southern Wisconsin may be in the headlights for a little more rain there, 0.5 to 0.75 inches or a little more through Saturday, and still some heat with that system. And then it does warm up starting into next week, Pam, as well. All of our forecast details right after this.
Bavaria's sausage is so much more than just award-winning brats. Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke can attest to it. They've got all kinds of fantastic food, both online and in their store location, corner of Nesbitt Road, Fitchrona Road in Fitchburg. Open Monday through Friday, 9 until 7, Saturday, 9 until 1. Did you know that if you stop by Bavaria Sausage, you can pick up not only those award-winning brats for your grill, but also restaurant-quality cooking essentials like burgers, chicken, pork chops, and steak. They want your event to be fabulous, and they've got it all ready to go. As always, you can check out their website, BavariaSausage.com. Have goods delivered directly to you, or if you're in the area, stop on by. Corner of Nesbitt Road, Fitchrona Road in Fitchburg, open Monday through Friday, 9 until 7, Saturday, 9 until 1. And don't forget, every Friday, rain or shine, they've got their fabulous brat fry. Follow them on Facebook to know exactly what flavor they're serving up. Bavaria Sausage. Yeah, and I see Outagamie County's got about 500 folks without power. Not what you want when EAA is in town, huh, Stu?
No, or when it's going to still be a hot day. You'd much rather have air conditioning.
Yeah, no kidding. And it is going to be a hot day.
Yeah, it's going to be a hot day. Maybe not quite so hot in the far northwest where some sun breaks through later today. Otherwise, cloudy skies, and there's still some chance of a scattered shower or thunderstorm, especially in, to call it, the southeastern almost half of the state, and there could be 0.1 inches or 2 of rain. A lot of low and mid-80s today. Could be a lot warmer in the far southeast. Southwest winds still blowing in many places, 5 to 10. They become west later today. A small chance of rain in the south this evening. Otherwise, mostly cloudy, more clear north. Upper 60s and low 70s with a west breeze. Partly sunny Friday. That warm front edging in. A slight rain chance late in the day in the south. Temps still up into the low and mid 80s. And Saturday, a little more likely. Partly sunny. Showers, could be thunderstorms. I'd expect, Pam, rain amounts that, especially in southern Wisconsin, push up to 0.5 inches or more. Not so much in the north, but will still be in the low to mid 80s. And there's more heat Sunday and Monday, warming up back up around 90 or more.
I see on social media the heat did not deter Packer fans from getting to training camp yesterday, or the Packers from riding the bicycles around. That all looked like it was on track regardless of the weather.
Well, you got to do that. Come on, that's important.
All right, man, we'll catch up with you tomorrow for a weekend forecast. Have a good one.
All right, see you later.
Stu Mucker, ag meteorologist, with weather details you're looking for here on the Midwest Farm Report. Talk text line is open, 877-301-FARM. Let me hear you.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent Pam Youngke appearance on John and Gordon.
How about breakfast on the farm?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
First of all, thanks to all the volunteers. Thanks to everybody that showed up. They were guessing north of 5,000 people that were there starting at 7 a.m.
Wow.
Got a chance to have a pancake. I looked down to eat my pancake. I looked back up, and all of a sudden there was a swarm of humanity waiting to stream into the machine shed for breakfast. So I thought it was really interesting to see what people are gravitating towards. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously the cows. The cows are the big attraction. Everybody wants to see them and kind of get a little perspective on how big they are.
Yeah.
But it was also cute to see they had three barn kitties, and kids could line up to hold the barn kitties.
Oh.
Now,
oh.
I mean, babies of any kind are cute, yeah. But when you put barn kitties with little kids, it was just, if you want to see the pictures, I've got some up at Midwest Farm Report and Fabulous Farm Babe on Facebook. But it was really well done. Third time that the Hinchleys had hosted it. Mm-hmm. So again, like we said, really, really well done for sure.
All right.
That's excellent. You know, Cambridge is quite a nice little town.
It is.
Been through there a number of times.
Yeah. Now, we did talk about the artisan butter last week.
Right.
Well, now let's talk about the food and beverage innovation camp that's going on. Kekkonen is putting this in.
Well, they're part of it. So I didn't know that this was going on. If you live or have drive through the Jefferson area. So what they're calling this is a food and beverage innovation campus. And what they're doing, Jefferson County, I don't know if you're aware, is home to quite a few different food companies. Nestle Food is down there. There's a lot of different food-related companies.
Jones,
and now they've decided to try to bring them all together in this food and beverage innovation campus.
Mm-hmm.
Kekkonen is the first to financially commit to building their factory there, and that's already underway. According to the economic development people that are connected with it, they said they've already invested about $563 million to create this welcoming area. And one of the reasons why Jefferson is so well suited for this is the workforce. That's something that Jefferson touted for a long time, and they want to continue to bank on that. So this looks like it is very well supported, not only in Jefferson County as far as public monies, but also as far as the agribusinesses and food companies that are interested in coming there. The next phase after they get started with the actual brick and mortar of the food manufacturing side of things, we'll be focusing in on creating the residential element for all the employees that these companies are going to be needing. They said they know that they're out there, but they want to make sure they're close to where they're going to have to work. So that'll be the next phase.
That's great.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The chairman of the House Oversight Committee has issued a subpoena to Glenn Maxwell, the convicted associate of Jeffrey Epstein, for a deposition to occur next month at the Florida Federal Correctional Institution, where she is behind bars. Sources familiar with the matter also tell ABC News that Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche will meet with Maxwell today at the prison. And another development.
The Wall Street Journal reporting that Attorney General Pam Bondi and her deputy Todd Blanche informed President Trump in May that his name appears multiple times in the Epstein files. They reportedly told Trump they did not plan to release the files, saying they contained child pornography and personal information about the victims. According to the Journal, the president said he would defer to their decision.
ABC Chief White House Correspondent Mary Bruce, one of two doctors who treated actor Matthew Perry with ketamine, has changed his guilty plea. He says he is profoundly remorseful for the treatment decisions he made. This is ABC News.
The next step for the Packers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from Lambeau Field. This will be head coach Matt LaFleur's seventh training camp in Green Bay. And although they've been to the playoffs nearly every year, I asked him, has he thought about what else is there left to do to get to the next step, a Super Bowl?
That's what we're always hunting, is trying to figure out how to get everybody to elevate. Myself, our staff, our support staff, and certainly our players, because they're the ones out there going to play the game. So that is at the forefront of our mind all the time.
Baseball, Brewers with a 10-2 win over the Mariners. The crew has now won 10 games in a row whenever they've had pitcher Quinn Priester on the mound.
You know, I attribute a lot of his success to the pace. You know what I mean? Like, he just gets it and goes, gets it and goes, gets it and goes. Doesn't give you a lot of time. There's not a lot of trepidation. There seems like there's a lot of conviction. Ball sinking, and then he's got a little cutter, he's got a little curveball, a little slider, and he's attacking.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Maggie Dawn.
Next, we celebrate democracy and what can make it stronger, what reforms are needed. I got all-star guests for the entire show. This is going to be a special one, folks. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
We have a chance of scattered thunderstorms, especially early on today, and then gradually clearing by later this afternoon. It's going to be cooler, but still muggy. Our high in the low 80s. Tonight, an isolated shower or thunder shower, mid-60s tomorrow. Partly cloudy with an isolated late-day storm, high 86. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 68.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I've been trying to learn sheep's head for 40 years. My father-in-law is still a card counter, knows what everybody has. It is so easy to go, oh gosh, I still don't know who the partner is, and is that a trump card or is it not? And so I'm still asking myself all these questions while they're busy taking all of my nickels. The one thing that got me where they allow me to play is getting the app. For all the technology that's out there, that is one of the positive notes.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to an interview with Clean Wisconsin's Amy Berrio. She discusses how the Wisconsin Supreme Court's ruling on a legislative committee's power could affect drinking water in rural communities.
So PFAS are a group of chemicals that are used on everyday products like nonstick cookware. They have tons of uses. They are found everywhere. And some of these are extremely toxic. They've been found to be toxic at very low levels in the parts per trillion. So there are starting to be drinking water standards and water standards for PFAS. PFAS are regulated under the Safe Drinking Water Act. So for municipalities, they are following the current Safe Drinking Water Act standards. But if you live in a community like Peshtigo or Marinette or French Camp or some of these other ones in rural Wisconsin that have experienced extremely high levels of PFAS in their drinking water, they are getting their drinking water from private wells. Those are not governed by the Safe Drinking Water Act. In Wisconsin, groundwater standards, so basically they get their drinking water from the aquifer, it's considered groundwater. Those are the standards that will help folks who are dealing with huge amounts of PFAS contamination in their groundwater, in their drinking water wells. And we don't have groundwater standards for PFAS in Wisconsin. The DNR pursued a groundwater standard. Time ran out on that, and now they're planning to pursue it again. Again, you know, the DNR up until today is thinking, how are we going to get this groundwater standard around these handful of folks at JCRAR? Now that the Supreme Court has made that ruling, we are incredibly hopeful that there will be a standard that gets through finally the rulemaking process. It's still going to take a long time because, again, they have to start all over with this process. It's a meaningful standard, some that are actually at levels that will protect people. Now, with respect to PFAS as a topic, as something that we need to get a hold of in this state and in this country, it is incredibly complex because you have PFAS that are in biosolids that are spread on farm fields. You have PFAS in almost every piece of furniture around us, continually made in consumer products. And the reason why they have the nickname Forever Chemicals is because they don't break down in the environment. So that means they only have a few places to go: in our air, in our water, and in our soil. So these rules are incredibly important to start to at least take care of the urgent problem, like the people in Peshtigo and Marinette and other communities all across the state are facing. But taking care of the fire isn't the same as taking care of the problem. And we've got an enormous problem on our hands with PFAS. It's going to take far beyond any rulemaking to address, considering how pervasive these chemicals are and how harmful they can be.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Championship game when Wisconsin beat Michigan State 42-39.
Yeah, no two ways about it. This weather makes it difficult to get big crowds at our county fairs, but I'll tell you what, county fairs are going to continue into the month of September. Stephanie Hoff joining us this morning with a quick update from the Wisconsin Fair Association on how things are going so far in 2025. Welcome back, everybody. It's the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. This is the Midwest Farm Report on this, the 24th day of July. Did you know on this day back in 1995, then Governor Tommy Thompson started a statewide Harley ride. What was he doing? He was promoting the new Brewers ballpark. And at the final leg of the trip, he was joined by Brewers legend Robin Yount. Governor Tommy Thompson jumping on his Harley hog on this day back in 1995 to promote the Brewers' new ballpark. Happy birthday today to power hitter Barry Bonds. He turned 61. Jennifer Lopez celebrating her 56th birthday today. And now you know. Well, we don't know how attendance figures are going to end up for county fairs around the state. Some severe weather has kind of taken the enthusiasm out of our crowds, but we're hoping it rebuilds. Stephanie Hoff has more.
We're in the midst of county fair season in Wisconsin. This is the time for communities to come together and celebrate agriculture, tradition, and of course, fun. But it's not without its challenges. Fair organizers and exhibitors are always keeping an eye on the sky. Thunderstorms, tornado warnings, and extreme heat can turn months of planning on its head. Today, we're getting a county fair update from Jamie Buckey, the executive director for the Wisconsin Association of Fairs, who gets to enjoy nearly a dozen of the 75 fairs during the summer. Jamie tells us what she's been hearing from the grounds so far this season about attendance, rain or shine.
So we're only a month into it, so it's kind of early because they really don't have to turn a lot of their fair reports in until 30 days after their fair is done. So a little early. I know this week we've had some storms that came through that early in the week we had a lot of fairs that had to deal with torrential weather, but I think they're prepared for that as well. But I think the one thing our fairs are trying to do even more than they've done in the past is the ag education, which may sound silly, but an ag adventure tent where people can get hands-on and learn about agriculture without realizing they're being taught something. I think our fairs are getting more in-depth with those exhibits. Not that you can't go see the kids showing the animal in the barn and ask the question. That's still an awesome way to do it. But I think they're just getting more creative in these other exhibits because people are further and further removed from the farms, and you're not only educating the child, you're educating the family that's coming with it. So I think they're doing a really great job at that.
When you say fairs are prepared for bad weather, how does a fair prepare for that type of blow to attendance and also income?
So there's a couple different things and things that we, you know, teach them at our convention and when we do our district meetings in the spring and the fall. We might talk about insurance, whether it's weather insurance, and you learn over the years different ways that you can play with the weather insurance, and you're going to spend this much money on something, is it of your value to insure it or not? So those are some of the things. You know, a lot of them work really well with their county government in, you know, what that evacuation plan will look like, so they take their time to do that. But the one thing I think we're really great is we are a family of fairs that share information. So if I have a blueprint for what works good on a potential weather, or we're going to have to shut something down, we have emergency procedures, our fairs share the blueprints that they have, and we're like, this worked at ours, or this didn't work. And we talk about when those things happen to be like, I wish our fair would have thought to do this or to do that, right? So I think because we're always networking and sharing those ideas, they just get better and better at the planning process.
I've also noticed a lot of fairs turning to community entertainment, community competitions with demo derbies and tractor pulls. Have you seen more of that this year so far?
Sure, and there's a lot of fairs that will have local bands compete, and they might be like a battle of the bands from within their county. I think as prices increase for so many other things, they have to look to the community to say, what can we do that it's not a lot of travel and expense to get someone there to do it? And I think they're being pleasantly surprised by the amount of entertainment that is there that they can utilize. They might be having cooking contests or, you know, like a pie contest or whatever. How exciting is it to bring home like the blue ribbon pie at your fair and that type of stuff? So they really are embracing it. And I think it's been seen. It's been your service clubs benefit from it, right? Because if your service clubs are working your fairs and they might be working the food stand or whatever, they're putting that money right back into the community. So it's just a full circle of community support.
Jamie, anything else you want to leave us with about Wisconsin's fair season before I let you go?
We are only a month in. There are 75 state-aided fairs in Wisconsin, so you have till about the end of September to go find one. You can visit us at wifairs.com. We have a whole list of entertainment and all of our fairs by date. So find the one that fits your best needs for your family and go out and visit a fair.
Jamie Butke along with us. She's the executive director for the Wisconsin Association of Fairs, talking trends in entertainment and also giving an update on how fairs are handling this wild Wisconsin weather. Find a complete Wisconsin fair schedule at wifairs.com. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
The only competition that really matters is you versus you. And with the performance of Veltima fungicide from BASF, you can take your best results even further. Veltima fungicide is on your side to out-yield the competition by an average of 7 bushels per acre, but you've never been average. Beat your own record, get every bushel you deserve, and make this your best season yet with Veltima fungicide from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Hey, Wisconsin, are you feeling summer? Then it's time to feel cheesy. It's time to feel good. July 31st through August 10th, only at the Wisconsin State Fair. Presented by U.S. Cellular.
This is the sound of corn pests wreaking havoc on your crops. This is the sound of a channel field protected by Bayer's trait technology. With the RNAi technology of SmartStax Pro, the all-in corn rootworm fighter, and VT4 Pro, Bayer's widest spectrum of defense, you can stay one step ahead of ever-changing pest pressure. Find the right corn trait for your fields at channel.com/corn traits. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
We're less than 2 weeks away from Wisconsin Farm Technology Days, heading back to Clinton Farms in Bear Creek. For the third time, they're hosting Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. One of the smiling faces you'll see when you get to the grounds, Don Zitlow. He is coordinating field demonstrations. Zitlow tells us it feels like homecoming to him.
Well, back in 1978, the year I graduated high school, our ag class and FFA members got to come down and actually drive the demo equipment. So I spent 3 days on a tractor and a plow down here, and I do some work for Tom Clinton, and I happened to be here doing some welding for him, and they were talking about it, and they said, "Boy, do I have a job for you." At this point, it's going to be hay, try to get it set up. So we're doing cutting, merging, harvesting all 3 days.
That a boy, Don Zitlow, one of the volunteers coordinating field demonstrations. Just one of the elements that you can look forward to. Wisconsin Farm Technology Days, August 5th through the 7th at Clinton Farms, Bear Creek, Wisconsin. If you need directions, want to buy tickets in advance, wifarmtechnologydays.com. All right, I'm talking with Ryan Yonkman from EverAg in just a moment here. Lot of whirlwind business yesterday on trade discussions. Japan opening up its markets to more U.S. beef and pork. Japan's our number two market when it comes to that access. Another big one, Australia, for the first time in 20 years, allowing U.S. beef to enter that marketplace. And if you stop and think about the amount of beef that Australia sold to the United States over the past 20 years' time, it amounts to more than $28 billion worth of Australian beef that came into the United States, but no U.S. beef allowed into Australia. So that could be pivotal. And then Indonesia, another market that Wisconsin agriculture has been looking at. Indonesia is the seventh largest export market for U.S. dairy. They bought about $245 million worth of dairy products last year alone, and now they're working on a deal to try to make sure that they eliminate trade tariffs on 99% of U.S. products, including dairy, and have commitments to address any barriers to other U.S. food and agricultural goods. So I'm going to talk about that with Ryan and see if it's giving us a lift up in the marketplace today. Dow Jones Industrial Average this morning, right now anyhow, down more than 100 points. Currently, our September corn is up 3, December new crop up 2.5 at 420. Soybeans for August are up 3, November new crop up 4 at 1027. The wheat for September is up 3 at 544, December's up 3 at 564. No change again yesterday on barrel or block cheese. Double A butter dropped 5.75 cents to 242. August class 3 milk that goes into cheese up 7. 717 a bushel, a hundredweight, I should say. Up next, like I said, Ryan Yonkman from EverAg joining us live to give us everything that's influencing dairy trade. Stand by for that. It's up next.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matinee on Air.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. An unwelcome surprise for Wisconsin farmers looking to apply for the Federal Rural Energy for America program, or REAP. The popular program helps rural small businesses and farmers invest in money-saving energy efficiency upgrades and clean energy. But the application window that was supposed to open July 1st was abruptly closed by the USDA. The agency says it's delaying the grant application window. The EPA is awarding a $700,000 grant to help Kenosha County pay for the final phase of restoration of the Pike River. Crews are restoring banks and habitat along the river and planting native pollinator-friendly plants. The project is aimed at improving the quality of water flowing into Lake Michigan. For a deep dive into environmental issues impacting Wisconsin, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Jay Matinair and Greg Bach.
Troubles in the courts for the Trump administration. Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney and acting attorney, will join us to break it all down. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Our cheese market has remained very, very flat. Butter market has been receding. Ryan, I've got to believe that that's a sign either of plenty of supply or lack of a lot of consumer demand. What's happening out there?
Yeah, you know, I would say up until a couple days ago, milk report, the focus was much more on U.S. demand, which we know still has just not been that great. We're used to kind of that 2% growth, and we're a lot closer to unched. When we look at the U.S. consumer, the flip side of that is we know our exports have been good. I think it's a huge reason cheese has been able to maintain a low, let's say, of in the 160s. But this past Tuesday, we learned something, and it turns out the U.S. producer has started to really turn the spigot on, and we had U.S. milk production up, I believe it was 3.3%, which was really well above anybody's expectations. We were at 2.5, and we thought we were pushing for a big number. So now I think the industry's kind of wrapping their mind around, like, hey, U.S. demand still relatively flat. U.S. milk production, it's coming. Some of it is because of low comparables in avian, but the reality is the herd is the biggest it's been, I think, in about 30 years. And so that is definitely a watch point in changing a bit of the equation as we walk forward and start thinking about 2026 even.
Ryan Yonkman, Vice President of EverAg, joining us on the Midwest Farm Report. I remind you about their website. If you want to find Ryan or any of the team, and they are deep on the bench, ever.ag. You know, that begs the question then, Ryan, about some of the international movement of our product. I mean, I get it that we can stay in a sweet spot on our cheese price to try to keep things moving. I had asked you off air whether any of these international trade deals that are being talked about by a lot of agriculture circles hold any hope. Do you see anything? Is there anything on the national scope that might help to drive some of these sales? Because I'm surprised we're holding back dairy cattle when beef is still very, very robust.
Yeah, you know, we were reading yesterday about the deal with Japan. I've not been able to get into the minute details yet of what it means for dairy. There was speak of agriculture. I guess the reality, if we're not getting in a fight with some of these close trading partners, that's positive news on its own. The last thing we needed is retaliatory tariffs where we're struggling to move product to places like Japan and South Korea and Mexico, where they're some of our biggest trading partners. So we're going to call it a positive. Don't know to what detail. What we do know is the importance of exports are massive. The more we make here domestically, the more pressure it's going to put on us to have to move this product globally, especially when our U.S. demand continues to look as flat as it does in some of our categories like commodity cheese.
You know, I'm curious also about even domestic seeing some changes that are afoot. Earlier this week, Robert Kennedy announcing that the dairy industry, one of the first to kind of come along with him and his Maha group on dyes in ice cream. Is there anything out there? I'm always a little anxious whenever Robert Kennedy joins U.S. Secretary Brooke Rollins for a press conference, but that one had some favorable results. You hearing anything else out there as far as that goes?
Yeah, I mean, there was an article published here recently, and I know it's been in talk for some time, on the U.S. dietary guidelines and them looking to ramp up dairy's involvement in that, and there's a chance and some conversation around, you know, getting whole milk back in schools, and those could be good things. Those could be very positive things, especially when you start talking about the distribution, you know, of the United States school systems. If we can get skim out and whole milk in, those are some interesting things that could move the needle. So we're very curious to see how that plays as we walk forward.
Any idea how this heat is going to be impacting milk production? You just said that it blew the doors off as far as June milk production was concerned. What are you thinking? Is this heat going to rein it in a bit?
You know, we're definitely going to get here hard in the Midwest. But what's interesting is we had a stretch like this in June, and a lot of Midwest dairies were off 10 to 20 pounds. I had some dairymen thinking this last report would be bullish, but the reality is the West Coast has been perfect. It's in the 80s this week in California. We're hotter than they are. So not to say we won't get hit again by this heat, because we're going to. I think the U.S. as a whole, though, has masked this, and that the West Coast has just been so darn perfect with their weather, and we've heard about plenty of milk out that way, California very much included in that.
And you say that they're still building, that the milk production's still coming on. So have dairymen just decided to not engage in the beef activity anymore? I mean, that dynamic had kind of kept us back on our heels with milk production, selling beef.
Yeah, no, I mean, the reality is everyone is still, for the most part, breeding every unneeded replacement back to this beef market. You know, hey, look, that thing set new all-time highs again yesterday. We're still talking $12, $13+ hundred dollar calves. That said, when you look at the equation and you look at the run the U.S. dairyman has had, where we're staring down the barrel of $4 corn and these record high beef prices. And the milk price is okay. It's not great, but it's fine. You look at that equation, it's telling us to make more milk. That equation says to go do so. We've had a bunch of new plants built in the United States that say they need the milk, which is true. And so that old adage, if you build it, they will come, it's happening.
Perfect way to end the conversation. Ryan Yonkman joining us live here on the Midwest Farm Report. He is one of the vice presidents of EverAg. And if you want to see all of their team and all the service they can provide you, not just dairy, but the food industry, take a look at ever.ag. Wonderful to have him along with us on a Thursday morning. All right, we'll catch up with you tomorrow morning. Same time, same channel.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Yonke. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Facing addiction? The Wisconsin Addiction Recovery Helpline offers free confidential support 24/7. Call 211, text your zip code to 898-211, or chat at 211wisconsin.org. Help is waiting. Sponsored by United Way of Wisconsin.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Tweaking plant genes to boost oil production, next on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community. And while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. Arabidopsis is a simple plant known mainly for helping scientists understand and explore plant biology, but a recently published paper suggests it could become quite useful for biofuels production. Plant biochemist Jay Thielen of the University of Missouri is one of the co-authors. He says gene modifications in the plant produce not only more oil, but also more protein.
What we ultimately want to do is kind of train it, engineer it to produce even more oil, as well as specialty types of oils that would be compatible, for instance, with sustainable aviation fuel.
Thielen says there's still more work to do, as the modification also caused the plants to break the oils down faster. One desirable trait is the plants mature quickly, he adds.
Have to figure out how to continue to produce more vegetable oils, but do it with the same amount of land. Cover crops are going to be part of the solution, and that we can get multiple rounds of crops in a single year.
Thielen says the project is a good example of how ag research can help solve problems beyond just the ag sector.
It feels like basic science is a bit under attack these days, and I guess I would just like to remind your listeners that basic science is critical to our economic growth and our infrastructure.
That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome radio legend Steve Cochran, who will make the popcorn pick of the week. Then the Overture Center's Tim Sowers joins me to give us a preview of upcoming shows. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Joe Thomas grew up in Brookfield, Wisconsin, and had Hall of Fame football careers with the Badgers and Cleveland Browns. So what's his passion now? Well, join us Tuesday when Joe Thomas sits down with Brady Ewing and me for a special on-location show from Six Springs Farm, the home to Hall of Fame beef. Catching up with Joe Thomas, Tuesday. You're not going to want to miss it.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The questions surrounding convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein continue. The House Oversight Committee chairman has subpoenaed convicted co-conspirator Ghislaine Maxwell to tell lawmakers what she knows about Epstein. What are they hoping to learn? Here's ABC chief investigative correspondent Aaron Katursky.
It's not exactly clear, but if you take them at their word, they want to see whether she knows if there's anyone who's responsible for committing crimes that may have been connected to Jeffrey Epstein.
The Wall Street Journal reporting that Attorney General Pam Bondi told President Trump in May that his name is mentioned several times in the Epstein files. Sources familiar with the situation also tell ABC that Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche will be visiting Ghislaine Maxwell in prison today. An appeals court has found President Trump's effort to end birthright citizenship unconstitutional. And Thailand and Cambodia have exchanged fire on their border in a sharp escalation of their conflict. This is ABC News.